You are listening to Talking Star Wars.
Hello, I'm Alex.
And I'm Connor.
And today we're going to talk about Star Wars.
As we do from time to time, and today we're going to talk about one entry in our look at different Star Wars Expanded Universe novels.
One of the ongoing series. So today we're going to look at Star Wars, Shadow of the Sith by Adam Christopher. A novel released within the last year, which is one of our tentpoles that is holding up the entire New Republic period.
As you might have heard in our Era Review episode, there's not a lot of content on the table as far as this part of the Star Wars universe. It's after Return of the Jedi, before The Force Awakens. The Mandalorian happens right after Return of the Jedi. There have been some books, but the closer we get to The Force Awakens, the less we know.
Yeah, so along with Bloodline, which is set 5 years before The Force Awakens, seasons 1, 2, and 3 of The Mandalorian, which are set between 5 and 9 years after Return of the Jedi, we have this book, Shadow of the Sith, which is set 18 years after Return of the Jedi, and whose main characters are Jedi Master Luke Skywalker, a Lando Calrissian who waffles between being charming, middle-aged gambler and desperate to find his kidnapped daughter. The parents of Rey, Dathan and...
Is that Dathan Palpatine? Or is
Dathan and Miramir. And yes, Dathan is a failed gene-cast clone of Palpatine, as we learned in this novel, which we'll get to in a minute. And then we also have another character who is possessed by an ancient Sith mask and is one of our antagonists. The mask, and who works for the cultists from Exegol, serving the Sith Eternal.
Is that Itchy or Scratchy? Or Ochi?
Oh, Ochi's a different character.
Okay.
Ochi is possessed by the Sith Knife, which is another artifact in this novel.
Gotcha. I can get behind that. I like the idea of these haunted Sith items, because Siths don't come back as ghosts. They should never come back as ghosts. I don't want to see Palpatine come back as a ghost if they ever do that.
So he comes back as a clone.
Yeah, that's fine. We've had a whole episode establishing how it is fine that Palpatine came back as a clone. They've been building up to that. The entire Clone Wars is kind of like a dry run for Palpatine being able to clone himself. It's fine. But no more ghosts. So, as far as this book goes, it sounds like it's halfway in between what we have. Return of the Jedi, Force Awakens. Who is our primary protagonist? Is it from Luke's point of view, or is it more of a third person where we're following multiple characters?
So, we have quite a few main characters in this book. But Luke is probably the one that gets the most direct screen time. But he shares that role with Lando. So Luke and Lando sort of probably split about two-thirds of the book between them. Sometimes they're together, sometimes they are apart, but they are, you know, what are driving the plot forward. We also have Dathan, Miramir, and Rey. Rey is, I believe, 7 years old at this time.
Okay.
So this is everything that leads up to the flashback scene she has where she's left with Unkar Plutt and her parents fly off planet, trying to lead away Ochi of Bestoon.
About a dozen years before Force Awakens, give or take?
Yeah, she's 7, and so I think she's 19 at the start of The Force Awakens, which would make sense for like the 30-ish years that take place between episodes 6 and 7. Mm-hmm. And then our main antagonists, we have our two main antagonists. First, we have Ochi of Bestoon, who has been hired by the Sith Eternal, the Sith cultists on Exegol, to find Rey. Because Rey is the progeny of a failed clone of Palpatine who managed to escape Exegol, and then
he might be Force sensitive. They might, you know, she might prove useful in some sort of bring Palpatine back plot.
All right, we also get one of our other antagonists. Her name is Kiza. She a female Pantoran who appears in the Aftermath trilogy, but who stole from one of Palpatine's cultists, Yupe, the mask of Viceroy Exim Panshard, an ancient Sith lord, and is possessed by Exim Panshard's spirit through the mask for most of the novel.
So, again, who's our point of view? Who's leading us through this story?
So yeah, we are sort of a it's a sort of a spiderweb story. This is not a straightforward narrative. And again, we're set 18 years after Return of the Jedi. So we have several plots that all sort of collide at once. So we have Dathan and Miramir and Rey. They are fleeing Jakku because they were found by members of the Sith Eternal who are been hunting him and Rey now for years. They leave Jakku.
So they leave with Rey, or do they leave Rey on Jakku?
Rey is still with them. Later in the novel, they decide that the safest place to hide Rey is the place where their enemy has already searched. Leave her there to try to throw Uchiha Bastoon off their scent. So they are one part of our protagonists. Our viewpoint there is Dathan, the father, who is from Exegol. Exegol looms large in this novel. People either want to get there, learn what it is, escape from there, or never go back there, or learn what's there. So Dathan is trying to get his family to a safe spot away from the Sith cultists from Exegol, who are working on behalf of the Sith spirit of his father, who is trying and failing to find a body that can contain his, damaged dark side spirit. Then we have Luke Skywalker, who at this point is firmly Master Skywalker of his own Jedi Academy, and who has been sensing a disturbance in the Force for months now, receiving visions. He is discussing this with Lor San Tekka, the individual at the start of The Force Awakens, who the First Order is hunting for, because they think he might know where Luke is.
How much do we get to see of Luke's Jedi Order at this point?
We see some in the novel. He spends a couple of chapters there. We see a little bit of Ben Solo. The primary focus is on Luke as a Jedi Master and how he moves through the galaxy, how he manages these dark side or these visions of the dark side he's having. And we see him stretched to the limit of his ability. But even when he's dueling Kiza later in the novel, possessed by the mask, he's trying to save her the whole time. Give up the mask. You can come with me. This does not have to end in your death. And we even meet other characters in the novel that he has saved from a life of having fallen to the dark side.
Okay. So we have this separate plot where we have Rey's parents, where we have Luke and Lando who are searching for these Sith artifacts.
So Luke then finds a Sith artifact on a planet and an archaeological dig. And is then, that makes his visions worse. So he goes to try to find more information and tries to go have a Force vision. Lando, meanwhile, has been hunting for information about his daughter, who was kidnapped 6 years ago at the start of this novel, Kadara Calrissian, and has been losing hope and is, a borderline alcoholic at this point. But then he hears word that there's these Sith that are trying to kidnap his family, and he's like, it might be something with my daughter, and I'm not going to let anyone else be kidnapped. And so he calls in his favors as a former general of the Rebellion to try to figure out where Luke is and to get information about Dathan, Miramir, and Rey, who were almost captured by the Sith Eternal when a New Republic patrol drove them off, but then just let them go on their way, because Dathan does not trust the New Republic at all.
I think it's kind of hinted at that maybe Jonna from Rise of Skywalker might be Lando's daughter, or they're going to be on this mutual search for family because she doesn't know who her parents are, and he's looking for a daughter, but something like that. But yeah. What I'm wondering is, do we have any sort of hint at the First Order in the background of this novel, or are they still, hiding in the shadows?
Yes, this is still before the events of the novel of Bloodline, where the First Order is established. We do learn in this novel that the Sith Eternal are up to their shenanigans on Exegol, trying to resurrect Palpatine. Yeah, so then we get to our two primary antagonists of the novel. So if our protagonists are Dathan, Luke, and Lando as our viewpoints, our antagonists are Kiza, and we do have viewpoint chapters from her and how she's being controlled by the mask of Exim Penchard, wielding the lightsaber of Darth Noctis. So just surrounding herself with artifacts. She's not Force-sensitive herself, but the mask has enough of Exim Penchard's spirit still in it that he can use the Force through her, because all living things are still connected to the Force.
These are Harry Potter rules. These are the Horcruxes.
Basically, yeah.
You can put your essence into some sort of inanimate object, and it's not really going to be a conscious moving forward, but it's a part of you. It's a compromise for them trying to remain immortal.
And in a great hit of continuity, Lando remembers his events from the Lando comic, where he found the mask of Darth Momin, who was a Sith artist and architect, that possessed a member of his own crew at the time. So Lando remembers it happened. Hey, EU works referencing each other in a consistent way. Love to see it.
Sounds like we're going to get a Masks of the Sith something.
Yeah, so apparently it was the thing to do for a while. You just bound your soul to a mask. Didn't work out for either Exton Panchard or for Darth Momin, but Darth Momin was destroyed at the hands of Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. And if you want to read 2017's comic, The Dark Lord of the Sith. But I digress.
Right on.
So then our other antagonist is Ochi of Bestoon. So Ochi, who we learn existed and is already dead by the time of The Last Jedi, and who was then depicted in the 2020 Darth Vader comic as sort of this buffoonish, overly arrogant bounty hunter who is about half as good as he sort of thinks he is, and then is gravely wounded on Exegol because he wanders too close to their sacred bled kyber crystal. It's living a life of sort of this, again, alcoholic, down on his luck dude, just on this desert planet, trying to find clues to get back to Exegol. Because he's convinced if he gets to Exegol, the Sith Eternal there can heal him of his many scars and his damaged eyes, and he will be born whole again. And the Sith are like, okay, we can tell you the way to Exegol with one of our wayfinders, but first, you gotta find this girl for us, Rey. And so they give him the knife, the infamous knife that has the map on it, whatever. Mm-hmm.
The map of whatever.
Yeah.
That somehow lines up with the wreckage of the Death Star that was made.
Well, it turns out the knife can change its shape, and is an intelligent and evil weapon. It's like a cursed item in D&D, basically. And it starts controlling Ochi more and more, because Ochi, while a combat bounty hunter, is a buffoon. But he's a dangerous murderer throughout the whole novel.
I'll say that I would be more intimidated by the dagger if it was like the puzzle box from Hellraiser and not a protractor with its arm swinging out. Or like a compass that just kind of opens slightly. It's not the most intimidating of weapons when you have lightsabers and Death Stars.
Well, the author of this book agreed because they wanted to make the knife more significant and dangerous. Like, mm-hmm. Ochi, you know, drunken stupor bounty hunter past his prime, is able to deflect blaster bolts with this dagger. Mm-hmm. And Luke is able to sense the evil in the dagger as well, and his one face-off with Ochi of Bestoon, and is able to actually, you know, deflect a lightsaber as well. So this certainly, as in a certain arc in Star Wars Rebels, leans into the fact that the Force can be present in objects as well, like such as kyber crystals, as well as in individuals, and how the dark side is about perverting those powers and unnaturally binding it into objects.
In fact, my favorite Rise of Skywalker fan edit, instead of having Rey open up that little compartment on the dagger, she just hears Sith whispers, and that's what tells her where to go. So it leans into that idea of Force-possessed weapons. So,
yeah.
Thank goodness for fan edits.
Yeah, but in this book, that's just some of Ochi of Bestoon's notes, because he was a compulsive note-taker trying to find his way to Exegol for decades, because he burned his own face off because he was stupid. We get lots of dark side weapons. So, you know, the plot is actually pretty straightforward. We get a lot of character work going on, exploring what people are thinking and feeling. Luke trying to contact the Force ghost of his father for advice. Luke trying to save Akiza from the mask of Exim Panchard. But ultimately, we end up with all these stories intersecting and colliding. Lando eventually decides his primary goal is to get Dathan, Miramir, and Rey away from the people pursuing them. You know, he doesn't know why they're fleeing. No one ever learns or really even manages to meet the family, but they know the Sith are hunting them. So they keep being just too late to truly rescue them, but keep tangling up the plans of Ochi of Bestoon and the Sith Eternal. Mm-hmm. We do actually get hints of the fact that the First Order is sort of getting ready to take place. We meet one of the eventual leaders of the First Order, who's undercover as a mole in a private security organization that Ochi of Bestoon calls upon.
One question I have, do Ochi and Kiza ever cross paths? Do they have any similar goals, both being dark side fanatics of a kind?
So they both desperately want to get to Exegol, and they are both being used as tools by the Sith Eternal, mm-hmm. with that as the prize. You can come to Exegol, because... Gotcha. Exim Panchard in the Mask believes he can make himself be, he can be reborn on Exegol, mm-hmm. which I think is not untrue. They're all about, you know, rebirthing Sith there. And XM's like, I already got most of my soul in this mask. But I mean, if you don't want the novel spoiled, you can stop listening now. But I mean, at one point, Luke is regretfully forced to kill Kiza. And then nearby droids activate, affix the mask to her corpse, and then he puppets her corpse the rest of the novel. Which is just sort of such a Sith thing to do.
Oh, yeah.
With, like, kyber crystals embedded in the mask and her skin, and it's pretty horrifying. But, yeah, Exegol is sort of this, like, looming dark side planet present throughout the novel. Dathan never wants to go back. Ochi desperately wants to be there because he thinks they can fix him. XM Panchard wants to get there because he thinks he could be reborn there. Luke wants to figure out where it is and do the Sith still exist? Because people were throwing the word Sith, and I thought I killed the last one when I blew up the second Death Star. So
wouldn't this entirely undo the dramatic climax of the last movie? I mean, my last adventure in this universe?
Yeah. So Luke, by the end of it, has defeated the Kiza and XM Panchard. People know this. Ochi of Bestoon successfully murders Dathan and Miramir with a Sith knife, which then drinks their blood in this weird vampiric Sith thing. And then he murders all of his own men after they question him. And then he's tricked into going to the planet where they find his ship on in The Rise of Skywalker with the knife, wanders into those salt flats because he's the best ever because he's Ochi of Bestoon. He can track anyone and then he dies because he's a dumbass.
As are many dark side users.
Yeah, and I kind of like this about his antagonist. He's a dangerous murderer, but unlike Cad Bane, there's nothing cool about Ochi of Bestoon. He's a scum. Yeah, he's a scumbag, and there's nothing noble about his intentions. There's no style to him. He is violent enough and powerful enough to compel other people to work with him, but when push comes to shove, he is abandoned, and his own hubris and inability to grow and change lead to his own demise. But not after he takes way too many innocent people with him.
So before sort of analyzing how this stands as a piece of media and a piece of Star Wars media, so who do we get the, like, let me say this, what character benefits the most in having this book exist? Like, it sounds like this would help to flesh out Rey's backstory. How does it work to flesh out Luke? How does it work to flesh out other parts of the Star Wars universe?
I mean, the three characters that get the most character work here are, we learn about Rey's father, but then he dies by the end of the novel. Mm-hmm. So as far as doing work on characters that stick around, we get Luke, where we both see his commitment to saving people, and you can see the fault lines by which he might be forced to, you know, flee from the galaxy if he thinks he's not living up to the ideals of the prior Jedi. We get work on Lando, so we see what would have compelled Lando to be undercover and hiding on this far-off planet, and how he both, you know, maintains this sort of suave, debonair air, but at the same time has this inner and lurking sadness. Mm-hmm. And then Ochi of Bestoon, you realize, you know, you see what kind of person would still work for the Sith Eternal.
Yeah.
And you get more about the ancient Sith, and how horrifying the Sith always are.
And how do we, like, that's what I'm wondering about Rey's father, because Ochi doesn't last either. You mentioned that Rey's father has this fear of Exegol. What sort of do we learn about the dark side of that area of the world from his experiences and his treatment?
So you learn that the Sith Eternal have a cult on Exegol. We learn that they are trying to clone Palpatine. I mean, Dathan doesn't know that. He just knows who his father is, which is who he knows it's Palpatine. But he doesn't know exactly what they're planning. He just wanted to leave. But reading between the lines, his observations are like, oh, they're trying to clone your father, Dathan. But we also learn they worship all the ancient, powerful Sith. Like, they have a chant about it. We learn that Darth Revan existed because he's part of their chant.
That's good.
This is the novel that canonizes Darth Revan as having been a powerful Sith at one point.
Do we get a shout-out to Darth Bane again?
Yep. They mentioned Darth Bane, Darth Momin, Darth Noctis. Not Darth Caldus, unfortunately. He's one of my favorite horrifying Sith.
What's his background?
He's the Duros guy that once, like, froze one of his apprentices into stone forever. And then the Night Sisters of Dathomir attempted to mentally compel him, and instead he seized control of their own minds and used them as, like, force battery cells for years.
Ooh, well, that's fun.
Yeah, Darth Caldoth, I believe. Not a great guy.
What media is he from?
He's in several of the short stories from Tales of the Jedi and Sith.
Okay.
And creepy. You have Legends of the Jedi. You also have, you know, the Dark Tales of the Sith, mm-hmm. if everyone wants to check that out. They're written like fables and bedtime stories, but they're all about Sith.
Horrifying.
Yeah.
So with this book, Shadows of the Sith, this is a book.
Shadow, singular.
Shadow.
The Shadow is Exegol.
Oh, there we go. I was just going to ask, what is the Shadow of the Sith? Yep. So as far as a piece of Star Wars media, as far as the one of the few pieces of New Republic media, and as a book on its own, how does this book stand?
So I think this is one of the better Star Wars novels. It does great character work. The plot is well done. It is stretching itself in probably too many directions because it's trying to fill in all the plot holes left between the interaction between The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker. How did Lando get to where he was? How did Rey get abandoned on this planet by parents who presumably loved her with the contradictory evidence given? So it is stretching itself to fill all these plot holes, but it's also doing interesting. You're getting to see Luke as a Jedi Master, both at the height of his power and also seeing the fault lines that would eventually result in him abandoning the Jedi Order. You see Ben Solo in both all of his arrogance and his sweetness, inherited from his family. So you see all of these things, sort of the building blocks. You see the bureaucracy of the New Republic, who are not really willing to help Lando, even when he tries to call upon his past connections, and he's forced to go outside the bureaucracy and call in favors of people directly. So you see how the New Republic just wants to pretend everything is fine. Individuals within the New Republic are nice, but the institution itself is failing, as we then see a few years later with Bloodline. So, as a work of world building, I would say it's really great. You see, you know, what people think of the New Republic. You see Luke's new Jedi Order, and how he's working with Lor San Tekka to track down Jedi texts and things. And then you get a lot of lore about the dark side, how Sith bind themselves to items, how the cult of the Sith Eternal has been around a long time, and how Palpatine co-opted and is using it as an attempt to return himself to life, and all of those aspects. So as a piece of world-building, a piece of Star Wars media, I truly enjoyed it.
Good. And it's, you know, as you pointed out in the past, it's so necessary to have world-building for this corner of the Star Wars universe. I have asked for an animated series in this era. So it's great to hear that in, you know, one of the few opportunities that fans have to learn more, it's with a piece of media that stands well. My final question. So if Leia gets Bloodlines, or is it Bloodline?
A Bloodline, yeah.
Bloodline. And Luke gets Shadow of the Sith. Are we going to have a Han Solo story set in between? Are we going to see something with him and Ben, perhaps, as the title characters for some solo bonding, falling out? So
Han does appear in Bloodline.
Okay.
He's not the main character, but he is a main character in Bloodline. So we do see him, you know, he's running a racing company at the time. He and Chewbacca still hang out. He's around his wife as much as he can bear himself to stay in one place. So I think, really, Han does a lot of his growth when he marries Leia and then tries to settle down, raises a kid, and then supports, when his child is force sensitive, supports having Luke train him. So all of those things. I think the most interesting thing to do for Han would be to see what happens to him in the interregnum between Ben Solo becoming Kylo Ren and how he ends up in the situation he is in The Force Awakens. That is really the area to be fleshed out for Han, because in between, I think you could pretty much trace the trajectory of his character. He doesn't really change much. He is a scoundrel, the heart of gold, who then marries, you know, a powerful senator and stays devoted to her for 20 years until their son turns to the dark side.
So yeah, I think you're right. I think having that dramatic action be, okay, my son has turned into the most megalomaniac figure in the galaxy. What's the story that leads Han to leave Leia and step back and become that smuggler again? That would be very interesting to have them flesh out. And it seems like there are interesting pairings throughout, because we have Lando and we have Luke in Shadow of the Sith. Leia, do we have a pairing with her that's, you know, someone that she bounces off with as far as a POV character in that?
The other senator, Ransom Castafaro, who is the younger, more idealistic senator who is being unwittingly manipulated by the nascent First Order, who just call themselves the centrists.
Sure. So whether it be someone who's unrelated or even Ben Solo, just having that other point of view character to have balance with Han, And, you know, we're... It's not like we have an abundance of Ben Solo media, so I wouldn't, you know, be too angry if he were to shape out that story.
But yeah, if you really like, you know, you want to see Jedi Luke Skywalker vaulting over molten pools and dueling a ancient Sith with his lightsaber on a frozen moon with great frost worms lurking beneath, if you want to see him trying to commune with the soul of Anakin Skywalker and stretching his Jedi abilities to their limit, if you want to see quick-shooting, fast-talking Lando making eyes at an Amazonian warrior woman, platonically and politely, but appreciatively, and losing and then winning and then losing at Sabacc. If you want to see an unhinged Sith assassin in Ochi of Bastoon stab a bunch of people to death with a dagger and then die an ignominious death himself. If you want to see how did Rey end up on Jakku and the series of desperate decisions that led to her having to rely on Unkar Plutt for survival, go ahead and give this novel a read.
Sounds interesting. So, and if you buy it and read it, there will be more media in this era, which is what we need.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening to our exploration of Shadow of the Sith. Join us next week for more Star Wars and in the future for more spotlights on more novels, games, shows, and more.
Until next time.